Okay, and Mrs. Spellman, I just want to say before we get started that this is a project for the Georgetown Public Library, and it'll be part of their oral history about the integration years. Can you say when you moved here?
We moved here in August of 1960.
Okay.
And we had already built our house. Norman had come down before we moved here from Dallas. He was teaching at SMU.
Great. Okay, so you moved here in 1960, and then when did you get involved with the CBS?
Well, I guess right from the beginning. I was on a committee to inspect the facilities at Carver.
Right, and who else was on that committee?
Our next door neighbor, Jay Wolf.
Uh-huh.
And Bob Brown, who's physics professor, and he, and there was young woman named Billy somebody that lived up on Huttle Road, and her husband taught here, but they, you know.
Mm-hmm. And on that committee, were there also some other people from the Georgetown School?
Well, Bill Locke was on the committee.
Okay.
And let's see, who else was on there? And I mentioned Bob Brown.
And Jay Wolf.
And it was Billy somebody. Yeah, Jay Wolf.
Okay.
And, I don't know, there weren't too many of us, really. I think that Billy and I were the only two women.
Okay, and how did you get involved on that board, or on that committee?
I was, you know, active in the PTA.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years later, I became PTA program chairman and then PTA president, you know, as you do when your kids are at school.
Uh-huh.
Mark, our oldest, was in second grade when we moved here.
Okay, okay. And so then from the committee, how did that evolve into you becoming involved with the communities for better schools?
Well, that was what it was for in the first place. You know, we first met at Dr. Eb Gervin's house in his backyard. You know, it was nice weather, and we just all sat out there, and there were a lot of people there. And you've seen a lot of those names, like Wendell Osborne, and shoot, I'm not even sure how many. I'll refer to this. And none of us thought it was worth it for them to build separate schooling for the black kids. Now, when my committee went over to look at Carver, it was in terrible shape. There were big old cracks in the floor, and the classrooms were little bitty, and they didn't have much of a library.
Right.
So, and it was over there on the ridge. And so some of us thought it was just absolutely useless. And, of course, the people on the school board, well, the ones who believed in segregation, you know, wanted to build a separate school for the blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we didn't have the money
mm-hmm.
even to do a good job of the Georgetown schools. So it was a financial thing, I think. And let's see. My wonderful minutes here. This is where I name all these people.
Oh, and you kept the minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, these were submitted by me. And we had several ministers. You know, we had the first big meeting with a number of the black people in the basement of First Methodist Church.
Right.
It wasn't United Methodist then.
Right.
And
Dr. Spellman was telling me about that. What was that first meeting like?
Well, the black people, of course, asked us why we wanted to do it,
uh-huh.
and we just said that we thought it was reasonable for everybody to go to the same school, and that the community couldn't afford to build a separate school, and the facilities would never be equal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just wasn't possible. I'm just looking at the people here. A lot of these school board members had been elected on a platform of keeping segregation. I don't remember if Doug Biddle was on the school board at that time. He was never in favor of segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the people that gave us a lot of money to help bring this suit. You know, we all did. And Norman and other people phoned a lot of people and asked for money. So, and a lot of university members did.
Wow.
Contributed.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what were your fundraising efforts like? How much time did you devote to...
We didn't vote any in our meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, the people just did it individually.
Oh, really?
And, you know, I guess Norman went to see some people and called a lot of people, and he was so active, of course, at Southwestern.
And do you remember at that first meeting, was that when you decided what the primary goals should be of Communities for Better Schools?
Yeah, I think it was the primary goal really was that we should have one school system for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning, as you know, there had been a separate one even for the Hispanics, and after they were integrated, but yeah, and Reverend Richard Smith was the preacher at First Methodist Church then, and he was very much with us. And we had this Reverend James Van Vleck was the minister of the Presbyterian Church, and we elected him chairman, but his church asked him to resign from that position and from the committee. So, of course, he did.
Yeah, it sounds like there was some pressure.
There was a lot of pressure, and there are a lot of people in this community who really thought we were just wild hair. What can I say? You know, and even when later when our daughters went to college, you know, there were some sororities that would never have pledged them. Neither one of our girls was particularly interested in the sororities. But, you know, I was never asked to become a member of the Woman's Club in Georgetown, which was very prestigious.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I'm sure this would be why.
Yeah, because even though you were so involved with PTA.
Some of our friends who moved to Georgetown 5 years later, you know, I remember the Campbells, he taught English, and she was invited to join the Women's Club, but it was too late. They were just as integration-minded as we would have been.
Yeah, and when did that tide sort of start to turn for integration once it happened?
Well, I don't know. Our children never had any problem with it, and I remember there was a black student who was in school with our son, who was the smartest kid in the school system at that time. You know, he had really, really big high IQ. And I don't know, you know, whatever happened to him, but I don't have his name here. Well, it's not.
I'm sorry, kind of jumping all over, but when did CBS decide to pursue legal action to try to get integration?
Yeah, I think pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, we hired a lawyer, and let's see, I'm just looking at this. Yeah, these are all the people, yeah, who were involved in the Committee for Better Schools. That's a lot of people, you know, the Southwestern people. Of course, the Southwestern people, their jobs were secure.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Harvey Miller, who's the suit was brought in his daughter's name, Crystal Ann, he worked for the West Bend Homes, you know, belonging to the Methodist Church. And there was another one here, Mr. Brown, who was the cook at Southwestern in the dormitory.
Yeah, and didn't Mr. Miller also work at L&M?
Yes.
For a while?
Yeah, that is where he worked, come to think of, you know, as you say that. I think you're absolutely right. And let's see, Will Kelly McLean, who was former district attorney here, he and his wife were very much with us. And of course, Gilbert Connolly, the county superintendent of schools, he and his wife were very much in favor of it. You know, those people.
Wow, and they were all members of that of that organization.
Well, yeah. But I don't know that they all came to it. You know, we met in various homes after we got started.
Mm-hmm.
I know we met here a lot, and we met in other houses. We met in the Harris's. Now, Ed Harris, who owned Troy Laundry, he went out of business because people would not patronize his laundry.
Wow.
And they moved away eventually. You know, he lived where Dr. Peterson does now, Dr. and Ms. Peterson, in that house. Yeah, there was very, very strong feelings. As if, you know, these black people came off of the moon or something.
Well, and I mean, I know that you have had a long history in Georgetown, and you went to school in Georgetown at Southwestern.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. So we graduated from here in 49.
Yeah, and then you moved away and came back in 1960. Mm-hmm. So did it surprise you that the community was so anti-integration?
I don't think we ever thought about it, you know, until that time. Although, of course, we knew Southwestern wasn't really integrated at the time we were students.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, you know, wouldn't have come up until we got to be parents and were concerned with the finances of the school. And We had some good teachers in our schools, but they weren't all.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were, I'm sure, very prejudiced against the black kids. You know, they...
Well, I know that you are talking a lot about financial mm-hmm. issues, and that was sort of the heart of the state lawsuit. Is that right?
Yeah, and, you know, the taxes were not very high here. Property taxes and people that lived in the outline, you know, in the whole school district. And nobody wanted them to go up, you know. That's what some of these segregationists, you know, they were elected on that platform. So, I mean, nobody ever wants taxes to go up.
Right, and this would have raised the taxes.
Well, yes, and you look at the Georgetown schools now, all the wonderful things they've done, you know, like this community for fine arts and all these things. It's just a different place.
Mm-hmm. But was there ever, like, a moral initiative behind why you were involved?
Yeah, I think so. We felt it was definitely a question of morality. You know, it was immoral to be like that, but we didn't. Obviously, we're not going to go around and talk like that, because we had friends, lots of friends and acquaintances who didn't agree with us.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Would you say, like, most of your friends and acquaintances didn't agree with you?
Well, you know, the people through Southwestern, they were pretty liberal-minded, I think all of them, really. And this young woman that, Billy, whatever her last name was, whose husband taught in the Georgetown schools, she really agreed with me, I think, pretty much. And Carver was in terrible shape. They couldn't afford to build a decent school for the blacks. Mm-hmm. Had little bitty rooms.
But eventually they did build a school, right?
No.
They never did?
No, we stopped. That's what our suit did. We brought mm-hmm. an injunction if they couldn't buy land and they couldn't start a building program until that was over. And we lost, in, you know, here, mm-hmm. and then we went to district court. That's when I testified.
Oh, you testified?
Oh, I testified, yes. Oh,
wow.
Yes. Because, I was the secretary. And the judge couldn't have been nicer. He asked me just a few questions. And among other things, he asked me, you know, why we got involved. And I said the same thing. But he said, did I think that we would have ever, it would integrate it without a court order? And he said, I said, oh, no, it couldn't have happened.
Yeah. Right. And so what kind of other things did that judge ask you? Do you remember?
That was about it.
Yeah.
You know, he asked, you know, he had a list of the members and all these people, but he did ask me a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. And what about this argument that some of the GISD board members had about free transfer? What did you think about that?
I don't think that really existed for black students.
Mm-hmm.
Where would they go? You know, they didn't have any money. Their parents were, you know, at best cooks and whatnot, you know.
So they couldn't really afford to get over to the white schools, even if they were allowed to go?
Well, they could come to these in Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And we had school buses, you know, that bused the kids if they were too far away.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't have been the problem. Our kids could walk to school because this little elementary school down here is where they went.
Mm-hmm. Well, so since you experienced actual integration mm-hmm. when your kids and being involved with the PTA, can you tell me what maybe like the first year after the Civil Rights Act was passed, what that was like?
Well, we weren't here until 1960.
Right.
And, you know, I don't remember that anybody ever talked about it in the PTA. You know, it wasn't, you always knew there were people that didn't agree with you, and it just didn't come up. So.
Well, I mean, did you feel like Georgetown was on a really good path to get integrated?
It wouldn't have been possible. No. I mean, and especially the people outside of town, you know, that were in the school district were even... you know, more adamant, I think. But a lot of the people in town, and people that own businesses, they wouldn't have liked it. I just like the fact that Ed Harris's laundry went out of business. Nobody would patronize. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't patronize it.
And then, well, once Georgetown had to integrate, what was that first semester?
I don't remember any problems. Our kids never complained, and we have a picture that shows Easter egg hunt over here just a few years into it. I think probably when Amy would have been in school, and there were several black children there. And that was Dexter Satterfield that was so bright. It's an old family name here among the black people.
So some of the people who were prejudiced while all this was going on, who weren't patronizing businesses and things like that, there weren't any problems once integration actually started?
Not all of them had children. Of course, the Wolfs did. They lived right next door to us. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm not even sure all the Wolf children would have agreed with their dad.
Well, what was it like living next door to the Wolfs while all this was going on?
Oh, we didn't really. I mean, I got along well with Betty Wolf from next door. She was friendly. And Jay was, you know, we never really saw him much.
So it wasn't a problem that you guys were on essentially opposite sides.
And even, you know, when we were on that committee, some of them were very patronizing, like Bill Lott. And Jay Wolf, in particular, looked down his nose at Bob Brown, our physics professor from Southwestern, and said, "Well, I'm worth a lot more money than you are because I own all this land and I'm doing all this." Well, he had bought up a lot of land when it was cheap, and he was real smart. He was very smart. And as I told you what Bob Brown did, that he had invented sonar. And he eventually made a lot of money out of that. They owned a big house over on Austin Avenue.
Right.
Yeah, that beautiful house there.
Well, so back to CBS, I understood when I was talking to Norman that there was a lot of ministers that were involved.
I think there really were. And there again, for them, it was a moral issue.
And do you
remember? You know the Catholic minister, for instance? Yeah. Father Palicki?
Father Palicki.
It's really, really neat. Yeah. I was just looking at these. A lot of these people, of course, were the Southwestern faculty. You know, like George Nelson, who became our president after the first president had to resign when he was asked to by his church.
Oh, the president of the CBS. Okay. And were a lot of those members, were they from Georgetown originally?
Well, a lot of them worked here. You know, like John Cardwell, he worked for the newspaper.
Oh, right.
And he had gone to Southwestern and been a journalism major. And we had known him at Methodist and Camp in Kerrville long ago. I mean, our neighbor across the street, Jacqueline Krager, was a nurse. I'm not sure how long she had lived here or how long, but she was on the Committee for Better Schools. Krager, that's pronounced it.
Was it unusual in those days? I mean, the membership there's a lot of women involved.
Well, there were a lot of men, if you look at that list.
Yeah, so...
But there were a lot of wives, and certainly Mrs. Gervin was very much behind it, and Shirley Switzer was on the board.
And what do you think their interest was, and how did they get involved?
Well, it was pretty much like ours, you know, a matter of a moral thing, and then of course a financial thing for the committee. We didn't think it was right for the Negro children to not have their own school. I mean, to have go to a separate school. And Mrs. Cardwell, Fran Cardwell, who still lives here, at that time she had gone to Southwestern. She certainly was with us. They were all of the same kind of feeling. I think the McLeans certainly were. Bill Kelly and Rosalind McLean. Yeah. And I'd forgotten that Gus Stinkin was even on our group, you know, that owns Gus's drugstore even yet.
Oh, right.
That family owns it. His wife, I think, was one of our officers. Yeah, mostly the couples agree. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think of anybody offhand. And a lot of these people were our neighbors.
And what was, like, the age range for people who were involved in that?
Well,
group?
I would say, now, see, we would have been 30 mm-hmm. when we moved here. And a lot of people were in their 30s and a lot of them in their 40s. And some older, like the Connollys.
And were there any young people at Southwestern? I mean, obviously
there
was a lot.
No, they had nothing to do with it. They didn't, you know, they didn't pay taxes. They really didn't know about it.
Okay.
And, you know, they didn't own any property. They were not that involved in the community. I think students are more involved today in the community, you know, doing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's almost mm-hmm. surprising.
They make a big effort to do things for the community.
Yeah. So the first lawsuit, the state lawsuit, mm-hmm. was you lost that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that we lost that.
And what was the feeling like when you realized that
well,
you lost
the suit? Well, we just figured we'd keep trying, you know. Our lawyer encouraged us, you know, to keep trying. He certainly didn't charge a whole lot compared to, even then, lawyers charged more than he did to us.
Mm-hmm.
But,
And what was that lawyer's name?
Oh, I've got it here somewhere. Where we...
Well, do you remember anything about him? What kind of a...
I don't remember anything about him at all personally. That he was... Oh, we certainly had no problems with him. Mm-hmm. You know, we were happy with him. Felt he had done the right thing. And he was happy to do it, you know. He thought it was a good cause. He was from Austin.
So how long afterward did it take the school board to be comfortable with integration?
Well, they didn't really have a choice.
Right.
And I don't know. I never attended a school board meeting. Really never.
And what was the...
Some of them would always have been opposed. Mm-hmm. And others, you know, like Doug Benold, would always have been in favor. So, sort of the way it is. Price Ashton was the lawyer's name.
Right, okay. And what was the feeling like on the PTA, while mm-hmm. you were on the PTA and while all of this integration was going on?
I never heard any complaints or anything, you know, we had meetings or whatnot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think people pretty much just accepted it. I mean, some didn't, but they didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that anything negative ever happened because of integration?
Well, I told you about Ed Harris's laundry
mm-hmm.
and my not being invited to join the women's club, which I couldn't, you know. I joined the music club and I joined another reading club, which I was very active considering that I had all these four little children.
Uh-huh. But, you know, in terms of... did you see any, like, repercussions against the black kids who were going to school?
I don't think so. I think our children never felt like anybody had any. And of course, the minute the black athletes sort of came on the scene when the high school was integrated or the junior high, they made a huge difference in sports for Georgetown. Everybody liked that. You know, going to football games is a big thing for everybody, all the parents.
Mm-hmm. So did that help kind of, I guess, like, social?
I think, people just didn't talk about it a lot. If you didn't agree with them, you know, they weren't going to come. And I never had anybody say anything directly to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, was this, you know, when integration was going on, was that like the primary focus of your lives?
Well,
when
yeah.
you were on CBS,
sure.
yeah.
Save money, I mean, mm-hmm. so that we could, and that we thought it was only right that everybody, black kids, should go to the same school the white kids did, you know. Wasn't fair to them or their families. But our kids never had any problems with it, you know. And they had black friends,
mm-hmm.
but mostly at school.
Right.
And none of them lived in our neighborhood.